Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And as always, it's great to have you back as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, and open innovation. Today, we're going to really get to the business of nanotechnology. As you probably know, and we're going to explore further in future shows, that nanotalks, and we've covered many times in this program, it really involved with ensuring the toxicity or lack thereof of nanomaterials. And Assured Nano merged recently, and I'm going to want to know more about that because they're involved with environmental health and safety that's very important in the moving of nanomaterials. Safety is a big thing with nanotechnology, and it's been a concern of us all for a good long time. Anyway, our guest today is Charles McGovern. He's co-founder of the INSCX Exchange, the commodity exchange that specializes in nanotechnology, and they have recently endorsed the Nanotalks Assured Nano merger, and he's going to explain a little bit to us about how that happened and why they did, and that'll be very interesting. And I want to remind you also about the International Conference on Nanotechnology that's going on August 15 and 18. It's coming up pretty fast in Portland, Oregon. So if you plan to attend, it would be well if you went to the website and registered. You can find the website at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see a link. And on this program, we'll visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of at the end of the first half hour. And in the second half hour, we're going to visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Now let's get to today's guests, who we are reaching today in Manchester, England.
Stand by.
Well, right now we have in the program Charles McGovern. He's co-founder of INSCX Exchange. He's a former professional trader with several leading U.S. and international investment houses. And Charles, you've noticed on this program that we've been talking about nanotalks and the merger of Assured Nano. And first of all, I'd like to have you explain to us what the INSCX Exchange is all about.
Okay, many thanks, Colonel. I suppose probably the best way to explain the Integrated Nanoscience and Commodity Exchange, or INCS Exchange, what we call for short, is basically as a commodity exchange for nanomaterials and alternative raw materials, both traditional and advanced precision materials that are now starting to come to bear in the industrial society that we live in, really. The equivalent for nanomaterials, what the London Metal Exchange commenced being for industrial metals.
I see. So this is an exchange where investors can buy and sell, and it's in the realm of nanomaterials. Is that correct?
Are you still there, Mr. Colonel? Sorry.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, indeed. I do apologize. It's just the line here cut out for a second. Now the exchange itself is basically an attempt to structure the trade, the ability to procure and supply a nanomaterial in an organized manner, akin to the procurement and standards that people observe, say, in trying to acquire any raw material, really, whether it's an industrial metal, an oil, a gas, or a substance, and so forth. And nanomaterials are essentially alternative raw materials that we are now starting to see created and used in society. In order to use those materials in an industrial manner, where you can have an industrial complex reliant on those materials, there has to be a system of organized procurement and supply, pricing, inspection, accountability and traceability as it would be associated with any raw material, and that is essentially what the exchange is. It's a forum where a supplier of a given nanomaterial can advertise that material for sale anonymously on the market, and the exchange process acts to deliver certainty in the trade process, where if somebody wishes to purchase, then they obviously have to fund that purchase. If somebody wishes to supply, then they have to supply to a certain specification. The list of specifications and nanomaterials will be infinite, as you and I know, given the innovation that's involved there. But it, in the same manner, to expect an industrial complex to base itself on these new materials, they have to be able to procure them very much similar to the manner in which Ford Motor Company would decide to procure steel.
All right, Charles. Well, the nanotox, of course, an assured nano merged, and I understand that your organization has endorsed that merger. And can you tell us why you have done that?
Well, very simply, I mean, we've had a long association with Assured Nano in the UK and the Institute of Occupational Medicine, because clearly a requirement for anyone supplying new materials or using those materials is the observance of good practice and standards. And realistically, the Assured Nano Institute of Occupational Medicine, they developed what was called the SHE standard, which is an abbreviation for Society, Health and Environment. And it's basically a code of good conduct amongst the producers of nanomaterials and the end users of nanomaterials. And basically, nanotox in the United States, they have adopted a similar mechanism. And it was perfectly logical from our point of view that both those organizations would merge, because in effect, it means that the SHE standard can now be rolled out in the United States, as indeed we're trying to roll it out here within the European Union, and particularly within the UK, where it originated from. So we certainly welcome the merger. It made logical sense, and we spent the last 2 years of the life of the exchange cultivating the support of the insurance industry for that particular code of practice and standard. And the beauty of the situation is this. A standard to be acceptable has to be impartial. I mean, for example, the Nanotox Assured Nano have absolute impartiality in determining whether or not an individual organization supplying nanomaterials comes up to that standard, or indeed whether a user of nanomaterials comes up to the standard, and the exchange cannot influence the granting or the withholding of that standard. It's an entirely impartial. It's not a standard allied to a single producer. It's basically an independent standard, and we fully endorse it, and the insurance industry regard it as vital anyway for any credibility to be given to nanomaterials at all. Accountability.
All right, Charles, our friends at Nanotox tell me that you have the ability to finance forward contracts. Could you explain that a little bit for us?
Well, the development of forward contracts in raw materials, as we say, and the category of raw materials will obviously spread across the spectrum of grains to metals to oils to any commodity or substance that's used in industry. It's not a new concept. It was first developed in the Kansas Board of Trade in 1851 to alleviate supply concerns in relation to the procurement of grains that were necessary for food production and so forth. And the situation is really quite simple, and it's probably something new to many people from the nanomaterial community who've had to focus on technical aspects and innovation and so forth. It's really a system whereby a company or a supplier who's actually developing a given material can procure finance to be able to upscale their capacity without earnings dilution and the usual situations that you would encompass. For example, if you have a small nanomaterial producer who wishes to acquire finance, their only source of financing at this present moment in time is either self-reliant on their own resources, state funding, or the benevolence of private equity. And for example, investors will, when they procure money into a company, demand a share in the company. So effectively, the idea of a forward trade contract is really something that follows in the tradition of the Kansas Board of Trade. It's endorsed by the Merck in Chicago. It's endorsed by the London Metal Exchange. It's really essentially this. The exchange agrees a specification with a supplier or a number of suppliers who are prepared to supply to that given specification of product. And it basically lists it on a forward basis on the exchange. The suppliers are approved to supply to the specification, and when they receive an order, the exchange then instructs the buyer to pledge a financial instrument to make good that purchase for future delivery, and that money is then used as collateral for the supplier to finance an upscale. It's really a system that is currently used today for example, in industrial metals, in the iron ore industry, in the oil industry, to put it quite frankly, the likes of BHP Billiton do not put a shovel to the ground unless they have a London Metal Exchange warrant to finance the actual excavation process. Now,
right.
I know mining and nanomaterials are two different things entirely, but in terms of trade finance, the mechanism works the same. The exchange acts as a guarantor of integrity. It basically says that the supplied material will be inspected to approve quality, and that the supplier, qualifying to supply to that specification, they will be guaranteed payment on delivery. And it's really, in my opinion, the only way that, in certain nanomaterials, that finance is going to come to bear in the quantities required to basically develop an industrial complex based on the use of nanomaterials. Otherwise, we may as well hope that the investment community will invest money in nanomaterial suppliers and not ask for shareholdings.
Well, so the endorsement of the nanotox and assured nano being assuring the quality and the safety of these materials is very, very important for your customers. Then I see, right?
It would be very important for any industrial customer. For example, if we take the analogy of Ford Motor Company buying steel, or anybody buying copper. For example, if people wish to purchase copper, grade one, there are several grades, of course, they are listed on the London Metal Exchange, where, for example, suppliers are approved and vetted to supply to that specification. What happens is the exchange process acts as a guarantor of quality, both in terms of safety and adherence to safety and good practice, and in actual terms of characterization of the actual material. Because what we actually do on the exchange is we combine the ability to ensure that a supplier has got the SHE standard or has a means to acquire that, which I'll talk about subsequent. But also we combine that with impartial and independent inspection and characterization of the actual material. That's conducted by Intertek PLC, one of the largest independent inspection companies in the world. You have other companies, for example, like SGS and so forth. But within the context of nanomaterials characterization, which is a relatively new field, it's only really a company like Intertek and their subsidiary, Intertek MSG, that have got the equipment to be able to independently characterize the material and prove its particle size and its purity and so forth. And it's really vital for the commercial world to know that, for example, if we're trying to market nanomaterials into the oil industry, that the buyer of that material is assured that what is actually on the specification is actually the material that they're supplied. We also enlist the support of the Material Science Department and the Department of Nanotechnology at Cranfield University in the UK, and for US listeners, it would probably be the UK equivalent of Harvard, for example, or Rice University. And the idea is that anything that is procured from the exchange is basically guaranteed of an assured quality. And the guarantor of the quality is not the exchange, it is the independent assessor. And, it's very, very simple. I mean, an industrial complex is not going to purchase raw materials that haven't got independent standards. And those standards will extend to the safety associated with the supply of the material, the use of the material, but they will also extend to the actual quality of the material itself. I mean, anybody who's familiar with the exchanging of raw materials across the global economy, it's a standard practice where the buyer will always insist on inspection.
Well, then there's all types of materials that are being traded. And I understand some pretty big volumes. Maybe you can talk about that and where you're sourcing the materials from. They come from Asia, Europe, the United States, Russia. Where are you getting these materials?
Right. Well, the situation in relation to the nanomaterial industry. What we've done actually since launching the exchange is try to bed down the industry, where we've actually tried to define a number of specifications. There's about 80 on there at the moment, across various material classes, whether they're the metal oxides, carbon nanotubes and so forth. There's several nano-enabled commodities. Both there's a nano-enabled commodity on the market that's manufactured by Serene Energy in Rochester, New York, which is a fuel additive. There's equally a nano-enabled commodity in the form of an iron chelate fertilizer, which is again on the market as well. So there are two categories of materials. Like we've classed them according to thematic classes, whether they're carbons, whether they're for example, oxides, metal oriented, etc., etc. And basically, the situation is a number of suppliers have registered with the exchange. We've approved them to perform for certain materials and certain specifications, etc., etc. And obviously, we have links into several U.S. suppliers where we've had sort of informal discussions with them. Many of them aren't members of the exchange at the moment, but certainly they're receptive to what we're trying to do. We're trying to actually embed the use of nanomaterials with existing industry, because for example, the tendency at this present moment in time is to concentrate on the higher end application of nanomaterials, which are infinite and very innovative, certainly. But our point of view is this: it takes a long time to bring something in the medical field or the electronics field to market. And that means that the nanomaterial producer who's trying to do that or trying to capitalize on that innovation will have to have deep pockets to sustain an existence as a commercial organization without any revenue stream in the interim. We're finding that a lot of nanomaterial suppliers are having to sign exclusive agreements for their raw materials, essentially, which are entirely illogical. The exchange system basically is listing a number of specifications of material, and if there's a single supply source, for example, if somebody's got intellectual property associated with the production method used to manufacture that particular material, then that intellectual property is protected by the actual contract, which says that individual supplier is the only person in the world supplied or approved by the exchange to supply to that material specification. So, effectively, the mechanism is to ensure that the nanomaterial supplier base doesn't tie itself up into agreements that it doesn't have to enter into. I mean, for example, if I'm supplying a raw material, no matter what it is, I should never license that material exclusively to one person. It would be akin to, say, for example, licensing the use of crude oil to one particular application.
Yes.
Crude oil has got many applications, as indeed many nanomaterials have got many applications, so therefore why should the nanomaterials community feel itself obligated, through lack of finance, to license the exclusive use of a raw material? It doesn't betray any sense of commercial logic at all. And going back to your question about suppliers on the market, there are UK suppliers, there are European suppliers in the market, there's some Chinese, there's some people from India, there's some people from the United States, but that number of suppliers is growing, and I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to provide a home for nanomaterial producers to expand their business in a manner where they retain their independence. I think that's very crucial for the industry going forward, because people have to realize that the innovation in nanomaterials is coming from the 5 to 10 to 20 man organizations or women organizations, and they're not cash rich, they're not the IBMs of the world yet, but they've got every potential to be that, and they need to sort of, we would encourage them to rally around the exchange and to use it as their market, where it's their standards, it's their considerations that are taken into place. Because realistically, gentlemen, we have to understand is in relation to nanomaterials, we are offering the innovation from the nanomaterial community, and it is up to the existing industries of the world to actually recognize that innovation and exploit it. We don't have to sell it in the process or give our businesses away in trying to do that. There are mechanisms in place that have been in place for a long time that have structured the expansion of entire industries. The Industrial Revolution, for example, in the United States, was based on the back of the commodity exchange process. Many of the industrial companies that you see today, for example, like Exxon, U.S. Steel, etc., how do we think those companies came into existence? They came into existence by obviously innovation, by obviously initial capital committed to startups, but they used mechanisms like exchanges and so forth to procure the finance necessary to be able to expand an industrial complex. At its most basic, if I were to return to explain the concept of forward contract, I would probably cite the analogy of the farming community in the United States in the 1840s and the 1850s, which were the exchange process lent the money to the farmer to buy the land, to buy the seed, to plant the crop that was already sold, somebody would agree to buy it. And that's really the concept of the exchange. And realistically, when we speak about commercialization, particularly in raw materials, particularly in the metals industries, in the oil industries, et cetera, if we're not prepared to embrace the idea of a commodity exchange, then I really don't see how we're actually going to structure the autonomous development of the nanomaterials community in those sectors without having to overcome some very, very difficult hurdles.
Well, you seem to make a lot of sense of those things, Charles, and certainly it seems to be quite clear. And the types of industries run all over the place. I mean, there's energy, renewable, telecom, chemical, everything. Is there anything in nanomaterials that you wouldn't be part of the exchange?
Well, I mean, we have reservations ourselves personally in the community in relation to the consumer. I mean, obviously, we have good relations with a whole variety of consumer groups based in the UK primarily and the European Union. And I think it needs to be approached responsibly. I mean, the analogy was presented by, for example, one of the chaps over at Scientifica, and he actually came up with a very good perception on nanomaterials. I mean, there is this mad perception that hazardous materials are somehow anathema. There are many hazardous materials in the world that we live in today, excluding nanomaterials, and probably a lot more hazardous. And what we're trying to say to the nanomaterials community is that, and in our discussions with the insurance industry, for example, risk is the business of insurance. The business of an insurance syndicate is to underwrite risk. They are not alarmed about the concept of risk. They just want to be able to quantify it. I mean, for example, we've seen a case with Toyota Motor Company in the United States where there was a lawsuit filed for, I think it's still before the courts at the moment, so obviously it would be sub judice or whatever, in relation to a faulty component in the car. If we analyze how the litigation process continued in relation to that investigation, in relation to Toyota, we're actually seeing something that at this present moment in time, the nanomaterials community is permitting itself to be left wide open to. For example, if something goes wrong, what measures are in place within the nanomaterials community itself to protect itself, both in a commercial context and in the context of society? And our point that we're trying to make is that there are mechanisms available via the exchange process where the nanomaterials community can protect itself, and it's basically this. They should all try to strive to achieve the SHE standard, and they should insist that their users of their materials have the SHE standard also. There's a traceability mechanism in place by the exchange which can provide the insurance industry with a reverse cycle audit from source to end product if necessary. I mean, for example, investigations are part and parcel of everyday commercial life. For example, anything that's procured on any of the exchanges in Chicago or London can be traced. But it's only traced when there's a warrant, or how would you put it, there's a justification for somebody to actually request an investigation. And we're trying to appeal to the nanomaterials business community to recognize the value of having an exchange process for itself, because the exchange will act to safeguard the interests of its members, and the nanomaterial community needs to have the confidence when it's sitting down with official regulators to say, look, these are our structures, these are our self-regulatory templates which we have in place, and if you wish to regulate nanomaterials, by all means do so, but regulate it on the basis of fact, and regulate it on the basis of having a recognition of what the industry itself is trying to do to basically structure accountability. Because whether we like it or not, and we do need to present ourselves as being commercially accountable. And the concept of having 1,000 or so products in the open market, some allegedly containing nanomaterials, some others not, on the open market without any degree or structure of accountability where we can protect ourselves from, I suppose, a proverbial army of lawyers wanting to jump and make easy claim money, it's complete lunacy. We need to start organizing an industry where it has a structure, and we need to have the confidence as an industry to organize it on the basis of what we see as necessary for the industry. For example, we cannot expect official regulation agencies to understand the complexities of nanomaterials. They don't have the resources in place at this present moment in time to do that. And there's a misconception about the entire concept of the registration of materials, or, in effect, the regulation of commodities or raw materials. There is actually no international body that exists to regulate commodities anywhere in the world. There's a regulation agency in the United States which regulates...
I have to stop you there, Charles, not just because we got a break for the half hour, but because I've got to question that further. I thought there were regulatory agencies like in the United States, so we need to explore that a little deeper, and let's do that right after the break. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Whom in the den of strangers will we meet today?
It's just old Harry Truman. Men make history and not the other way around. In periods where there is no leadership, society stands still. Progress occurs when courageous, skillful leaders seize the opportunity to change things for the better. I'll tell you that.